Hey, we're here at the Farm Match event in Hudson Valley with the one and only Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm. And Joel, you did an incredible opening kind of for this event, but one of the things that you said that really spoke to me was this freedom as neighbors to exchange, because we're talking about obviously what's been happening to the food system, and you've been one of the rebels out there leading the way on the things that should actually be just normal. For us to be able to do. So I would love for you to just elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, a lot of Americans don't realize that that judges in America have actually written in decisions that Americans have no right to choose the food that they want to eat. There's literally no, we have the Bill of Rights that gives us the freedom to speak, assemble, worship, but we don't have a right to choose the food for our bodies. And so as a result of that, the government has decided that they can decide what is available in the marketplace. Now, interestingly, the prohibitions are not on buying. If I can find somebody, under the table, under the radar, black market, to sell me raw milk or a homemade pepperoni, okay, from their artisanal little, pepperoni supply, a pot pie that they made with a rabbit or something. If I can find somebody and buy it, it's perfectly legal, and I can eat it. I can feed it to my children, feed it to anybody. The only illegality is the farmer can't sell it to me. That person can't sell it to me. And so the prohibition is only on one side. Now, most things in our country, when it's a hazardous substance, whether it's, pharmaceuticals, prescription drugs or other drugs. I don't want to get into argument about drugs right now, but the point is you can't take it. You can't buy it. You can't sell it. You can't even have it.
Right.
Okay. But in food, the prohibition is only on one side of the equation.
Fascinating.
It's just you can't sell it. So you can give it away.
Mm-hmm.
You can give it away. So the result is that there are hundreds of farmers and hundreds of food items, mm-hmm, that could be available in the marketplace if this prohibition didn't exist.
And what's the workaround? Because, we've talked about private membership associations,
sure,
and we know what's happening right now as we're discussing today, getting around that. People have looked around those loopholes.
Right. Well, there are numerous workarounds. So there is a Rogue Food Conference that's held now twice a year. And the Rogue Food Conference is putting a stage light on people who have made an end run around the system. Kind of our mantra.
Successfully.
At some point when compliance becomes so onerous, circumvention becomes the more efficient
our
path.
Responsibility.
Circumvention is more efficient than compliance. When the licensing procedure gets overwrought. And so, yes, you mentioned personal membership associations is one way. It is now being tested in the courts. Exhibit A is Amos Miller. Okay.
Right.
So there's one workaround. Another one is a lady in North Carolina, Neethi Bali, has the food church. So she has a food church, that you join the church and then you have, rights to this. There's a guy in Oregon, for example, who he writes up an agreement where you and he co-own the animal. He butchers it and he keeps the offal, and you take the cuts.
I've heard of that.
Because you can process your own animal legally.
Right.
And so there are others that are using kind of the caretaker's agreement where, for example, you want 10 chickens from me, well, you buy the chicks and then you pay me as a caretaker.
Mm-hmm,
so I'm actually not selling. So just to bring people up to speed, this whole arena that we're in now is trying to figure out a way to transact business without it being in commerce. The legal term is in commerce.
Got it.
So if you can create a transaction in which in which you can make an exchange that doesn't satisfy the in-commerce definition, you're good.
We're good.
You're good. Which on the surface belays the point that it's obviously not a food safety issue.
Right.
Because the prohibition is only on one side of the equation.
And obviously this has been going on. People have been finding these workarounds, but do you see that there's a kind of a resurgence of it with the last couple of years as people are returning to the land and homesteading, and we know what's coming, that there's a sense of urgency to actually have food freedom, food sovereignty, and food security?
Yes, absolutely. There's push on both levels. There are a lot of people who aren't farmers that are desperate to kind of create their own food insurance program.
Me.
Yeah, food insurance program. I want to know that I can get food. And so they're going to farmers and homesteaders and people say, will you be my supplier?
Yeah.
So that push is coming from one end. And from the other end, from the, I'm just going to use the word homesteaders, because there is a homestead tsunami going on. People are heading to the country. You know, there's an innate understanding that, you know, when the wheels fall off, I want to head for the hills, right? And so a lot of these homesteaders are going out and they're finding, oh my, I just thought you could milk a cow and sell a pound of butter to a neighbor.
Yes.
I thought we could go to church, and if somebody wants, a chicken or wants me to make a pot pie for them, that I could do that. Uh-huh. And they're suddenly discovering, well, no, that's illegal. I can't sell that. And so there's push on both ends of this, and a brand new awareness as you know, food security becomes a big issue.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we're here at the Farm Match program. You've been working with Max, and just to give a shout out for them putting this event together, and how do you see what they're doing moving this trajectory forward to get food to people?
I think it's fantastic to come in and actually have these kind of conversations in a place, because people, you know, the average person, they don't know these kinds of things that we're talking about here. They don't know the scale prejudicial food safety regulatory climate. They just assume, you know, food inspection is there for my safety. No, it's actually not. It's there.
I loved what you said about when you took that poll. And that was crazy. You said, what was it?
Yeah, I asked this class of college students, about 300. I said, do you think that a government agent, an inspector, should sign off on a carrot from your own garden before you can safely eat it? And one third of the hands went up.
Amazing.
So that's not even meat or milk. That's just a basic idea. I can't trust myself. I've got to trust the government. The government is there for my safety, and I can't be safe without the government. And I think it is the ultimate disempowerment of a citizen to be told that the only solution for your problem is a government agent or a government agency or a government licensure. That's the last resort. That should be the last resort. We should exhaust all the private licensing, Uberizing the food system, real-time monitoring. I mean, we should exhaust everything before we go and ask for a government solution to anything, certainly our food.
Absolutely. Then that leads to a great pitch for your book. Thank you so much for everything that you do for all of us, for leading the way and food sovereignty and being an example of that. We really appreciate everything that you do and your commitment to even be out in the world and sharing it nonstop. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a privilege.